Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Creative Control. Comedy, art, and sometimes rock and roll. Let's do a public opinion poll. Raise your hand if you love creative control. 'Cause when Vish is unleashed, well, you... Oh, sorry, I didn't see you there. I was just working on a tribute song to my favorite podcast, Creative Control, with Vish Khanna. My name is Matthias, and I play in a band called The Burning Hell, but more importantly, I support Creative Control on Patreon, and I think you should too. Quality long-form arts journalism is like a magical talking unicorn. It definitely exists, but it can be really hard to find. Fortunately for us, Vish makes it easy with hundreds of funny, thought-provoking, well-researched, and engaging interviews with artists from all over the world. Your flexible monthly donation on Patreon will get you plenty of special exclusive treats and help Vish keep his podcast well-fed and cared for properly, the way a magical unicorn deserves.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Richard Marcella is a prolific musician, composer, bandleader, community organizer, and instructor based just outside of Toronto in Brampton, Ontario. Active since the mid-1990s when he composed music for the Tom Green Show, and earlier this century as a driving force behind the innovative Brampton Indie Arts Festival, Marcella is also a scholar who recently received a PhD in music education and completed a dissertation entitled The Musical Playground as a Vehicle for Community Building. Marcella is likely best known as Friendly Rich and has released spirited and challenging folk, pop, and punk music on his own and with a band he dubbed the Lollipop People. His 16th album is a reflection upon what his life was like during the pandemic, called Man Out of Time, and was released on March 31st, 2023 via the label We Are Busy Bodies. As such, Rich returned to this show for a good talk about things like people's perceptions of bushy bearded men, the relatively small number of impressive collaborators he worked with remotely to make his new album, imposter syndrome and wise words from the great Dave Clark, being multilingual, the end of men, temporal confusion, future plans, and much more. a part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary source of revenue for this podcast and all the work that goes into it. It is a donor-driven enterprise, really. You can learn more about how you can contribute at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 772 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Friendly Rich, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Rich. How's it going?
Good day. I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. I appreciate that. Not everyone asks, you know.
You look good. The last time I saw you, we were eating donuts in person, and we were both very just bearded.
Oh, were we? Did I have one, too? I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure. We were both kind of sporting some fine beard work. So you're clean shaven now, which tells me that your state of mind... It reflects your state of mind. That's my theory. So I think you're doing well.
But okay, first of all, thank you. Secondly, you have a beard. Does that suggest your state of mind is cluttered or what is the beard? People said this to me. Oh, well, oh, I see you've got a long beard. Are you okay? I'm like, what?
Yeah. There's something there. There's something there. And maybe now as well with me. I don't know. You know, it's hard
I used to. Whenever there were writer's strikes in Hollywood, and it would affect TV shows, I would notice that Letterman, Conan, whoever else would grow what they called strike beards. Yeah. And do you know more about labor stuff maybe than I do. Do you know why that would be a thing that someone would, okay, I'm not going to work.
Yeah.
So as part of the symbolic protest, I'm going to grow a beard. Do you know what that means?
It's probably as close as artists can come to a playoff beard.
Yes. Maybe. But I think
it's also like if you're knocked out of your normal routine, i.e. a strike would probably be that in their case, it's gonna be reflected on your face if you can grow a beard.
Playoff beards, by the way, are usually superstitious. I'm not going to shave until we want to win. I don't know why. First of all, hockey players are idiots, and I don't know what the hell that's
Thank
about.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. But they can all Yeah, the son let's talk about the son of Shane Corson. May he never play hockey again. Just like let's wish him harm.
Which one is he? What did he do? I don't even remember.
Well, he was in the midst of that scandal if we're going to get into it.
Let's not get into it. Well, I don't know which hockey scandal you're referring to, but I'm referring to
the Hockey Canada slush fund for raping. That's what.
Yeah. Horrible.
Anyway.
Horrible.
Anyway. Yeah, good morning to you, Vish. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. All I was going to get to though is the beard, and I didn't know we were going to go that route. I think it's fine. I do think if you don't Letterman still quit the show or stop doing his show, his late night show, now he has a big Santa Claus beard. And I think there's something liberating for a man to not have to shave for appearances but people make fun of it. So yeah, or James Harden. I'm not making fun of you. You look fantastic. I'm just saying.
You're very kind. You're very kind.
I don't know what it means. For me.
Yeah. No, I honestly do think there is something there though. In the pandemic, my beard went really far, like as far as I've ever pushed it. And I think it was subconsciously maybe for me because I didn't know how I was doing. But like I will tell you this, like I had like my blood pressure just started going weird and it was it got kind of hairy. So I think there is something there. I truly do think there is something there.
Mm, okay.
You don't know everything. You don't know truly how you're doing, do you, at any given moment? Like there's so much going on. that I kind of, as I look back on that period now, and I think my blood pressure is doing a little better now, thankfully.
Good for you.
Your head is in the mix there, and so it's reflected on your face if you're lucky enough to grow a beard. It was kind of fun too, though. Like, I was like, holy cow, this beard is getting really interesting. And I know you had one that was getting really interesting.
Oh
too,
yeah,
so
super
you
long.
Relate to this.
Yeah, and people were not. Some were complimentary, and some were. Yep. But people
mixed
were,
bag. Like, mixed bag. Yes.
You know who was complimentary about it publicly? It was Warren Ellis. Tweeted about how I looked and said I look good, but I think he was joking because I look more like him. He's always got a big beard, but I do think I think when you are at a point in life, and we all were for a while, where it didn't feel like much mattered, you know, like what does it matter? Oh, okay, well, we're confronted by this existential crisis. What matters? So you just stop grooming? I don't know. People just were really weird. It just, to me, it was like, what is the point of all the stuff we do? Because my hair was long too, by the way, Rich. Everything was
I remember.
Like, why do I need blades on my face and my head right now? It's fine. It doesn't matter. So.
You're a family man. I'm going to ask you this question, though.
Sure.
Did it ever get into your, did it affect your deodorant game?
Well, here's the thing about me, Rich, and my wife will back me up on this, as will most people who've spent close proximity to me. I generally do not emit foul odors in terms of... Lucky. I haven't worn deodorant. I used to wear deodorant in high school because I thought I had to. And I have not... I bathe, I shower, I soap up, but I don't apply any fragrances. Yeah. And so far, so good. No one's been like, you stink. I play sports. I work out. I do for stress. I do all sorts of things. And I'm not, I don't know what to tell you. I got lucky. Okay. I don't have the BO thing, so I don't have to worry about that. And but my daughter, I just wanted to share something I've never shared before on the show, is that I don't, unless I've had like, okay, here's when I smell. If I'm cooking up a big pan of onions.
There you go.
Then
I
smell like onions. Yeah. But I tend to not, hang on, let me just do a quick. I just did a sniff. I did a sniff. I'm fine. Yeah. I think I'm okay. I haven't had a shower yet today. I'm fine. Okay. I'm fine. So it's not that. But my daughter, very fascinated by the beard. In fact, when I shaved it off, she kept it in a Ziploc bag.
Oh.
And hid it in the house until my wife discovered it and decided it had to be disposed of. So it did have an
I love this. I love this.
She called it.
You should have made a sandwich.
She called it. Well, you know what, though? With the beard and the hair, there were some hair sandwiches. Every meal, people were like, Papa.
Yeah, right.
Papa, there's hair in the. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I was tying it back and wearing hair nets and hats. And it's disgusting. Yeah, so the last time I got.
It is kind of gross.
I got my son and I went and got haircuts in like, I want to say it was February. At a professional place, and it was partially that again. I was like, oh no, it's getting long, and when I cook, it's getting into the stuff. I don't like it, and there's hair everywhere.
It is fun though, eh? It's like a state of mind. Like my wife and I went for his and hers haircuts in December, and it's just a fun thing to get a haircut or to a nice shave. Like I do like to do it once or twice a year, and then it becomes work, and that's when I go back to like I'm kind of. Up and down with it.
I've seen you share your shorn photos. You look, the thing is, people really like it. Like, because of this age we're in, if you share your haircut photo or your beard cutting photo, I did that the last time I was in Guelph. I hadn't had a haircut. I have all these quiet rules for myself. I thought, I'll shave the beard when vaccines appear. Yeah. That'll feel normal again.
Oh.
It doesn't feel normal. So then I got a shot, my first one ever. Whenever that was, whatever year that was. And then I was like, I'm going to shave the beard. And then I got a haircut. Wow. And I started, you know what? I will kind of passively quasi agree with people that there was something mental about it for me. I'm like, I'm going to go with beard and hair cutting as markers of time and progress. So then I went to Guelph in, I want to say it was April of 2022 for a funeral service or memorial service. And then I went to visit my family. And I went to my old barber in Guelph, who I hadn't been to. I hadn't even been there before the pandemic because, as you know, Rich, I think I've kept my hair long. Since 2014, I kept it quite long. So I went saw Paul at Franco's, and he gave me a nice haircut after it was very, very long. And I shared it, and people got so excited that it was a new me. You've done the same thing. Like, look, it's me.
It's amazing.
It's Rich again. And people are like, Rich, there you are. I don't know if they said that.
Yeah.
But was that the feeling you got?
Yeah. I love... Sometimes you could go very... Muppet with your delivery, and that felt so good to hear you say that.
Rich, there you are.
Yes, Vish, here I was.
Hi ho, hey everybody, yeah, it's Rich. I can't.
It's fascinating. Well, that was you. You really went for it there, but it is interesting, and it's also fascinating that social media. You can go like, oh, this is the ticket to social media engagement. This is what people want to see. They want to see you shave and not shave. They're not really interested in records or artistic expression, not as much.
No, you don't have to tell me because of late, as we're speaking, I think we follow each other on the socials. I used to, my kids were helping me with the socials because they liked doing these little stories about my podcast.
Yes, yes. Charming.
Yeah, it was charming, but I also, every once in a while, even after I post them, I felt icky. Like, what am I doing? Like, am I one of these people that's making their kids into social media people? And then, but they want to do it. So then you're like, well, it's a fun thing we do. And my wife, I was looking at my Instagram feed the other day, my photo feed anyway, and I hadn't done it in a long time. And it's all just about the show now. I don't know what else to post about records or food or what am I supposed to. So I'm just like, here's my guest. And I got to start thinking more.
Well,
the kids have asked recently, should we do a story? And I'm like, well, I also wait till I have physical copies of vinyl. I've decided too. Those are, I like them to hold it. And then I feel like I'm really helping the artist and it doesn't feel so like self-serving.
That's
you know what I'm saying?
Let me send you a copy of this.
Oh, that would be lovely. Yeah, there it is. There's the record. Man Out of Time. Congratulations, Rich. On this. That's great.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, this.
Pardon me. Thank you, sir.
You are one of the most ambitious musicians and artists I know. You were, like all of us, forced into pandemic times, forced to do things a bit differently. Is that a fair way of capturing what has gone on with you in making this record?
It is. Good ear. I mean, sadly, though, I've told a few people this, that I wanted to go there anyway. Like, I was kind of wanting to return to me. I used to say this, not that I really did it much when I was young, but I used to do like parents. I used to make records naked in my parents' basement. And sometimes I was, but let's not get into that. It's just that idea of returning back to like indie, not having the pressure of like paying for studio time. So I wanted to go back there anyways. The last record we talked about.
Yeah, when you were on.
We are all terrorists. I did that like across, you know, I did a bit in Montreal. I did a bit here in the GTA, and it was like 75 musicians. It was really big in terms of the scope of it. And I wanted to kind of go back to my roots, if you will, and do something a little more insular and nomadic in my own kind of zone anyway. So I did this. I didn't need the pandemic to prompt it, though. I was kind of going there anyways. But what was cool about the in a way, not cool, but about the pandemic is that we all started sharing files. So it wasn't just me alone naked in my parents' basement. It was me throwing stems to a longtime collaborator in Budapest who used to be here in Toronto, Sly Juhas, and he's adding drums to tracks. So it was kind of cool in that sense that it was like a mix of both worlds and it was really collaborative still, you know?
I'm doing it right now. I fell into a project with a hero of mine and I just went and recorded some drums and then sent it to him. He put bass on it and now I'm just sending it around asking people to put stuff on top.
Fun.
And it's And at least one of the people that I admire wrote back to be like, well, because I said, oh, you did something like this. And I really admired what you came up with. He's like, well, that was Vish. That was because we were locked down and we're not anymore. I'm like, well, I'm in Edmonton. I feel a bit locked down from my heroes in California.
And
I'm in Edmonton. So we still feel a bit locked down from each other in a way. And now we use
Yeah.
We're using the information superhighway to connect, I suppose. That was.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you said you were heading this way after making We Are All Terrorists, 75 musicians, multiple studios. I hear ambition, but I also hear expense. That sounded like it must have been. I mean, you probably had some. Did you have like a grant or something? In Canada, we have grants.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, but I think just artistically is like that pressure. So Jack Breakfast and I were talking one day, and he told me over nine innings at the Sky Dome, he told me like basically the idea of wanting to move back to that freedom of just like hitting record with no one watching and interesting, like not having the pressure of time or ego in that, oh, how are my chops for that take? And I'm not getting that take right or whatnot. Like all the stuff that goes on upstairs. So no inhibition in making the thing. And I think that's really what I wanted to harness, because we have the chops, we have the technology. And so it felt like it was the best of both worlds. Now, that being said, I mixed this record myself, and that was a bit of a learning curve for me. I had support from my pal and longtime collaborator, Greg Dawson. He kind of equated it to, you know, when you go to the dentist and the oral hygienist kind of does most of the work, and then the dentist comes in and just picks around and asks you how you're doing, and you go, ah.
Yeah, they try to talk to you when your mouth is, I don't know what they, why do they do that? I don't get it.
Power play, total power play. That's how I want to have all my conversations with my hands in your mouth. Right?
Well, the questions aren't like, sometimes they're like, you okay? And then you can go, and then, but then they're like, so you studied English, I hear.
Right.
What was your primary interest to study there? And then you go like, and it's, why are we doing this?
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
Dentist tangent.
No, dentist tangent.
Yes.
Well, that was it, right? And he came actually in the pandemic in the middle of it and brushed up my mixes, and seeing him in action was like, oh, I went up and down in terms of like what the function of mixing music is, believe it or not. But after seeing him in action, I go like, yeah, I probably don't need to do that again.
When you indicate to me that it's revelatory, were you like, oh, he is fading something in the mix that I would have left way, way up? Like, was it that kind of stuff?
No, it was more like, why in God's name was your workflow like he color coded all of the different things, but that's more like just for his visual
organization.
But it was more like, it was organization. And it was also like, I compressed the hell out of everything to get really nerdy into it. And he just went with a more minimalist approach that let things breathe a little more.
So you're learning. So you'd never done that before, mix and
not really. Maybe early days. So once again, like a good mix of like early days. I really kind of think like this record captures like a few different sides of the way I create. Right? Like it's not like you listen to one track and they're all the same. Like it's definitely goes
well,
kind of bounces all over the place that way. And that I think was due to the way that I made it.
Well,
too, you know?
But there are songs that jump, like you're talking about dynamic range, and I don't know which version. I downloaded whatever was sent to me a long time ago. I don't know if you sent it to me or somebody else did. So I'm hoping that what I've been listening to in my car and on my in my speakers in the kitchen, I just have the digital download, is the mastered version. But then there's a song called, is it called Kiddos and Doggos? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And that thing scares the hell out of everyone in my house, because it's going along and it's it's not calm. It's eerie. And then there's just this explosion of singing.
Right.
And every time I have to fumble for that, I'm like, oh my God, I got to fumble. I got to turn it down a little bit. I'm like, I forgot this was coming. So, again, this is not, I don't want to alarm anyone. Great song. However, it's scary. And so you, for a mix, someone mixing you or your work, Rich, or mastering your work, they're in for some surprises. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, yeah, and I hope it's that way too. I do hope it's that way. That's a nice thing you're bringing me into your house in terms of that's a nice thing, a nice image too, because I know the spot you're talking about, and it's like I'm just trying to cook some onions here, and boom, like hang on a second. Now that tune also features. You were talking earlier about collaborating with your heroes. And that tune features Brian Poole, who the four nerds in the room are going to know that that's Brian Poole from Ronaldo and the Loaf fame.
Yeah.
So I'm collaborating with someone in Portsmouth in the UK, a legend. Like he's basically my John Lennon, I think.
Oh, you know? Nice.
It's like, yeah. Oh my God. Like, so you're talking about collaborating with your heroes, and I feel really, really, just blessed and thankful to be able to say that Brian Poole is on this record, and he used his this technique that Ronaldo and the Loaf kind of honed in their early days called Rod Cod, which is doctor backwards.
Uh-huh.
So they called it Rod Cod, and they would, and he did it to that kiddos and doggos and turkeys and tacos and all the line there that I'm screaming at you. And he did that backwards and then manipulated it and then played it forward again. That's something that Ronaldo and the Loaf kind of coined back in their day. And I was honored. I'm like, oh my God, he really put it all in, you know? Yeah. So fun, right? It's fun to be able to collaborate with your heroes, right?
Yeah, it's very fun. And that's an interesting segue, because you're doing stuff not naked, but you're doing stuff in your home or whatever on your own. When you're sharing files, because I've just gone through this myself, so I'm curious what you did. In my case, yeah. I was like, "Hey, we did this. Do whatever you want to it. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I don't want to write you lyrics. I don't want to just put whatever you think makes sense on top of this, please, if you don't mind." And so some of that's starting to trickle in. Did you give people? So I ask you the same question. When you start to circulate these files to Brian or anyone else, are you saying, here's what I had in mind? Or are you saying, I love you and respect you. Here's what I've got so far. What do you think you can contribute to it? Can you distinguish between those two impulses, directions or no directions kind of thing?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it's like producing from the other side of the pond.
Yes.
In a way. And it's like, I did get, in his case, I think the tune was fully baked, and I said, what I want to do is actually bring myself like down, if not out of the mix, and put you up. So I'd like you to sing in these spots in your style, doing your thing. Yeah. And then he added the Rod Cod thing at the end, which was just like a added bonus. So it was a bit of both. It was like, yeah, be fully creative. I'm never going to tell, you know, it's very rare that I'm giving anyone, I'm working with all these like monster talents in like Michael Ward Bergeman in New Orleans and Kevin Bright. I rarely give them any direction.
You know, just please contribute is basically it. And
it always comes back magical. Yeah. Like batting average is good.
That's great. You know? I mean, that's a great way of, I think it's a, again, I'm still stung by, I'm not stung by it, but one of the people I asked kind of took me to task about it in terms of how they do it and why they do it, because they've done it. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting time, because if you have an email address for someone, your heroes, and you feel like you have an affinity for one another, you could ask, and then you've got, I don't know, I have imposter syndrome about it, because I don't consider myself, as much as I've made music and toured and all that stuff, I would very much hesitate to call myself a musician. And that's a little bit of modesty and doubt for myself. But then, then you do it and they come back and you're like, oh, maybe I am a peer, or maybe I can be. You know what I mean? Do you ever have that? Like that, like, I can't believe I'm sending this email to someone to play on my own thing.
This, you know what? This resonates. And if I could say anything to it, I would say our dear friend, our mutual friend, Dave Clark from the Rheostatics, he says this. He says in the Woodshed Orchestra and the multitude of groups that he plays with, he says, and he's quoting a jazz musician that he knows who escapes me at the moment, but he's basically saying that if you're in the room, like if your hero returned that email, i.e. in our digital age, I guess that's the equivalent. But if you're in the room with some of these folks, you're in the room with them. And I felt like it's, I know that that sounds obvious, but it kind of is only in your own head. I'm not saying don't come prepared or don't work on your developing your voice and what you have to offer every day, but that self-doubt thing that you're going through of am I a musician or not is like a really, I think it's not the question you need to be asking yourself, right? Is like, you are a musician, you're in the room with these folks, you're collaborating.
Yeah.
And I think once you kind of adjust, if you can, that perception, that's when the magic happens, because it's like, you feel just a little better about yourself, because I gravitate towards there. I wake up and have to readjust in a way, right? I gravitate towards what you're saying about like, but why am I in the room with this guy? Why am I in the room with Yo-Yo Ma, which I've been in the room with Yo-Yo Ma before. And it's like, or Michael Ward Bergerman, who plays with Yo-Yo Ma. It's like, I gotta stop this line of thinking. It's just not healthy.
No, I think you and I and others, the most talented musicians in the world, the people we admire the most, have all imposed themselves upon somebody at some point. Imposed themselves upon a room of people, 10, 15 people, to try playing music before they get to the place where they're playing to 70,000 people. You know what I mean? There's a little bit of gotta put yourself out there.
There is.
And you and I,
your phone isn't going to ring.
No,
your phone isn't going to ring if you don't do this, right?
I think you and I also share something similar, Rich, in that, we may be known for different things by different people. So there may be people who know Friendly Rich from your work in the Lollipop People as a musician. There may be people like myself included who have a different history with you, where I know you as the person who started the, curated the Brampton Indie Arts Festival. That's where we first connected. So I think of you.
That's right.
I think
that's
of you as a teacher, an organizer, an arts organizer, a musician. Like, you are multifaceted. I think where I'm coming from is, I would say most of the people that I recently sent files to would know me as a journalist or a guy that they've had nice conversations with on a podcast or someone who's reviewed them well, whatever. Like, what I got back from some of the people I admire so much is like, oh shit, you sound great. I didn't know you could play, you know, because I've alluded to it, but I don't really. So have you had that at all in your trajectory of like, oh, Rich, wow,
no,
these are great songs.
I hope so, because no, I've always, where I would adjust it is just like, I've always seen myself. The difference is like, yeah, you can't really control how others come to your work, right? Yeah. But I've always seen myself as like, in the core, in the nucleus of the thing that I do is music and composition and creativity. Around it is like community building.
Yes.
In its multiple forms, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not like I'm coming at it as a mechanic or anything else. I think or a journalist. I think, and by the way, I dabble in journalism with my weird outsider podcast, Industry Tactics. So it's like, but nowhere in there do I consider myself to be a journalist. I guess that's where it's a little different. But what I've come to realize is, without thinking that we're special snowflakes, we kind of are special snowflakes. Like, I don't want to, I'm looking, as you probably are, to shed ego with every year that goes by.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I would agree.
You know, and I'm glad to hear it. However, if you really analyze your perspective and your experience and what you have to say, whether it be musical, on writing a book or on radio, whatever your medium, you are special. You know what I mean? And it doesn't surprise me. And I know your background. I know that you've done a lot in music that gets you to this point, and I think makes your perspective super unique to making music, because you've seen it from both sides, right?
Yeah, that's a fair,
not a surprise to me.
No, that's a fair way of putting it too. I was just talking about this with someone, a filmmaker, Chandler Levesque, about how as much as I might be known, or as much as what I do now is mostly talking to people and something in the realm of broadcasting or podcasting or journalism, I got into this because I wanted to play music. I got in playing drums, like trying to figure out how to get in. And over the years, I became multifaceted. I mean, what you're pointing out too is it's not uncommon for someone to start out making records and then to start writing books. Nick Cave, Patti Smith, whoever, like they, we contain multitudes, I suppose. I'm sure they don't feel like imposters. Maybe they do. Like maybe the first time someone like Nick Cave started writing fiction or started to enter the realm of soundtracking movies, like stuff you've done, scoring TV shows, maybe something, there was some doubt there. Right. I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is in our realm, the doubt I feel or the imposter syndrome thing is probably more common than I realize. Like, I appreciate the pep talk you're giving me. And
no, but I get it. I get it. I get it. And I certainly relate to it and work on it. I think you have to. And I think that every experience you have, like when I did that record, The Great Blue Heron with Kevin Bright and Hoxley Workman at Hoxley's studio, not having done a lot with Hoxley, I kind of felt like it was like I went in there as prepared as I could be, but I came out of it stronger.
Yeah.
And I it was that moment that I realized, and I realized it ever since, that it's like, now you have that. Now what? Right? And you just, not that we're always needing to like level up and just like we're on this constant crescendo. I don't think it, because that's unhealthy too. But I do think it's like you carry all that experience with you to a point where you I'm trying desperately to stop saying that kind of stuff when I'm given these opportunities that not, and given sounds a little bit like it comes from out of nowhere, when I've hustled for these opportunities and some of them stick and I'm happy to hear that your heroes are responding to your emails, and I don't think that's by accident. I don't think that's by accident.
Yeah, you
know? Same with me and Brian Poole. Like I've worked on honing that relationship with him for like 15 years. He's responded to my emails and he's been lovely, lovely, lovely human.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think you're right. There's probably something in those files, that as I sent them out, I felt like, well, this is shaky and blah, blah, blah. But then the people responded to be like, I like this, you know, I want to do something with this. And so, we've touched upon a number of things here that make me feel good, and I think and I hope make you feel good as well, because it sheds some insight into how you work here. Now, we mentioned that your last record had 75 musicians. You've alluded to the fact, we've obviously been alluding to the fact that this record is not without its collaborators. You cited some. First of all, how many on this one? And if you can think of that number, if that's interesting or not, I don't know. And then within that, can you talk a little bit more about who plays on this record and maybe what they brought to the table?
Sure. I've talked about the people I've mentioned, Michael Ward Bergman, who I'm evolving a new show with in New Orleans. I'm going to go out there in April and June as well. Just doing a new, bringing this music to life in the real world with him is going to be a joy. But there's others. There's like Drew Jureka, someone I've known for years who does string arrangements, really, really beautiful string arrangements. And it was interesting with him because you talked about how much direction did I give. I really went with, he did the string arrangements on all of the Félix Leclerc material. So there's four tunes of the great Quebecois songwriter Félix Leclerc that I kind of reinterpreted on this record.
In French, no less. And, yes.
French, in my not my mother tongue, that's Italian. in my cousin tongue.
Are you fluent in the French?
I when I worked for the government of Canada, I got CBC French, which is close to like you can actually speak it. But when I was in Ottawa, they called me the Acadian because my French is not the greatest, but I can get by. You know,
I won the French award in grade 8. But it hasn't taken.
There you go.
It hasn't taken. I don't have it anymore. And my kids are in French immersion and they're embarrassed by their papa. Papa.
Okay.
That's not how you say that. I'm like, I'm doing my best here. I can't. I've never been good at pronunciation anyway. I grew up. I wonder sometimes. My parents spoke Hindi. I understand Hindi.
Yeah.
Used to speak a little bit of it. And I do think, I wonder if my pronunciation, sometimes I misspeak and like I'm like, oh, I'm talking like my mother or my father. And because
would that have been your mother tongue, Vish?
Hindi, you mean?
Yeah.
No, English is my mother.
Okay.
Huh. They would talk to us in Hindi. They do talk to us in Hindi. Uh-huh. Also spoke to us in English. My mother was raised by nuns. Or sorry, my mother went to school. No, she wasn't raised by nuns. My mother's was taught by a nun. So some missionary, probably some missionary bullshit, if I may. Okay. And then my father.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear
my
that.
Father wasn't. Yeah. So my father's English can still be occasionally a little stilted or something. But my mother's is quite clear and enunciated. But anyway, they would speak Hindi enough that I would pick up on it. I understand it all. In fact, I was at a grocery store with a fellow elderly Indian guy who was trying to figure out where to line up to get into the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to communicate, and all he could speak was Hindi. Mm-hmm. And then I communicated what to do as best I could from memory. I'm so out of it. And he figured out what I was saying. And then in Hindi, I tried to say like, I'm sorry, my Hindi is not very good. And he's like, you're correct. You're right. Wow. It's not very good.
And, oh no. Oh wow.
But it was enough that he understood. So all this to say, I wonder if, having that one, you know, I feel like our brains have capacities. And languages, some people are what? Trilingual, quadrilingual. Yeah. Like people know lots of languages. I'm not Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds. I don't have them all. I'll say that. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. You got, what do you got? You got French, Italian, English?
And English. Yeah.
That's great. Trifecta.
But I'm terrible when I'm in Germany. Like I'm just terrible. But thankfully, most Germans can speak English. But
do you speak? Have you tried to speak German?
I don't even bother. I know Fleischsalat, which is like salad with meat in it. And donkey, you know, that's it. Which is donkey.
There's some connections between those three: French, Italian, German, some English.
Yeah.
Little anyway. All this to say, sorry. Why did we start talking about that? I don't even remember. My point was French.
Drew Jarecka and a beautiful collaborator in a string arrangement. So he kind of I gave him the. I was like, look, I want it to sound like Scott Walker, scary, and he brought it, you know, like it kind of that was. But we went through each tune kind of meticulously, and he did these string arrangements that were fantastic. And then there's Rebecca Hennessy and Michael Herring, who Rebecca added amazing trumpet lines to many tunes on it. And then, as I said, I got to collaborate with a longtime friend of mine and musician that I've known for like the last 20 plus years. Like we used to do stuff on Much Music together, like way back when Much Music kind of cared about weirdos, you know, or existed, I should say.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Who's the friend? Sorry.
Exactly. Sly Juhas. So we go way back and he's now living in Budapest. Mm-hmm. And what a miracle. Like it's a kind of a miracle that you and I are even talking today. I just, none of this, you know, none of this escapes me. None of it escapes me. It's a really beautiful way to open up the arts and how we make things, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a right to be cynical about all this virtual interaction, but I do that's my main thing. And that was what I was having a little debate with that aforementioned person who was like, well, I don't think file swapping is ideal. I'd rather be in the room with people. And I'm like, yes, the environment is collapsing. And all this travel is not good. Yeah. And also, this is easy. I mean, if you're into what you're hearing and you feel the spirit of it, which is what I was going for. Like in my case, I didn't put any thought into what I was doing when I improvised everything, but ended up playing in some manner of structure. And then a bassist was able to glom onto that and come up with more structure, actually give it more. Wow. Anyway, all this to say, like the spirit of it was, like jamming, like I'm going to, drummer's going to start in this case, the drummer has some ideas. I'm going to play to that and then we're going to spread it around. Yeah. It's not perfect. It's not 10 takes,
good.
But it's loose, but it's that spirit of like, let's see what we can do without anyone in the same space. And we're, you and I today, we're not in the same space, but it feels kind of like we are. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah. And we get more used to it as we kind of build out that muscle. And I think it has a lot of merit and I think is a fun way of doing things that will include people that should have never been on your record or you maybe should have never even known. That's kind of That's how
I,
right?
Like, yeah, that's how I'm looking at it too. So I think we're on the same page. You suggested earlier that after the experience you had with your last record, you were already thinking about doing something like Man at a Time. So I wonder if we can get to any of the lyrical themes in that regard. Had you started writing or pondering this material in the lead up to what ended up being this pandemic? Because I just wonder if your lyrical themes shifted between those, if you had. And I'll ask you to answer my question once I finish rambling. If you had started writing before the pandemic, I assume you also wrote a lot during the pandemic, and that's reflected on this record. Had your mindset shifted between those two time periods? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think this record was made fully in the pandemic. Like it, I see. It was in the midst of it all. Not to say that little things didn't kind of bleed through. You know, it's funny about my writing. Christine Duncan told me this recently because we're collaborating on a duets record at the moment.
Oh, nice.
And she said, I'm writing some of the songs. She's writing some of the songs. And it was funny. She kind of said, Rich, your lyrics are really just all over the place and open. It's not like I'm that direct in the way that I do it. And maybe it's shrouded. Maybe I don't want to directly unpack some of the crap I'm talking about, so it might be you have to dig a little deeper to kind of figure that out. I don't know, maybe that maybe it's a form of just kind of being shy or cowardly songwriting, but but it's there, it's all there. I feel like it's all there. I'm getting it out the way I need to get it out, and I'm trying my best to kind of communicate something. But yeah, it's kind of a scattered, there are bits and pieces of like Convoy in the song FOMO Yodo. There's definitely like Convoy resistance shrouded in there, of like, and a bunch of other stuff like Man Out of Time came from a conversation with a good friend of mine that said that line, and the minute he said it I was like, oh yeah, that's a song, and I wrote it in like 15 minutes. It's just, some of them come really quick, you know, just like Alanis Morissette when she wrote Jagged Little Pill, right? The songs come out in 15 minutes, right?
Well, some of them also ended up requiring more scrutiny as to whether or not they made sense, as I recall. So maybe 20 minutes might have helped alleviate that. I don't know. Slight, and I have no horse in this Alanis race. I didn't mean to do such a sly dig.
No.
My question here, though, is, and I recognize that you call the record Man at a Time. That's an interesting sentiment, and I'll tell you why I think so. Man,
okay.
That could be you.
Yeah.
That's a very personal thing. Time
right.
is not. Time is a collective. That's a universal experience we have. When you say man at a time, you feel you're that's that sentiment suggests someone who feels out of step with things. But time and temporality has been so weird for most of us, particularly right. over the last 3 years. So
right.
I listen to your music and think of different time periods all the time. It feels both contemporary and timeless, and yet I can feel where you're drawing from wilder parts of cultural moments throughout the history of time. Mm-hmm. My point is, in that sentiment and that song and these ideas, was that a goal of yours to try to tell a personal story that, or express things that are personal to you specifically, but also try to bring that we're all kind of going through this feeling to the proceedings? Does that make sense?
It really did. And I mean, I always start with me. At this point, it was alone in a room, in this room that I'm talking to you from, creating with all the tools at my disposal. And I like the limitations that also brought upon me. And the label that's putting this thing out, it's not the most commercial thing I've done. I don't think anything I've done is commercial, but this is definitely not. Definitely not. But they saw great potential in the Quebec stuff of resonating with Quebec audiences, which I do love to connect with, mm-hmm. And other. But they kind of saw Man Out of Time as, which I was not intentional, but I'll take it, the idea of men, like we're done, we're done with men.
Oh, that's a good call. That's weird. I was just talking to my wife about this today, about how men are, what's going on right now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Men are the problem. We know this.
Yeah.
They just got to go away. They got to let's bring it back to Shane Corson and his son.
Yeah.
Like enough. The penis in the room, go away, get lost. We're done. You know what? I'll take it. Yeah. That too, Vish, is I'll now say it after the fact that I wrote it. That was what I intended.
Yeah. That's really, but I didn't say, that's an interesting take on it, because what I was saying to my wife and I were just talking about how fucked up everything is in terms of sort of socio-political stuff. And I said, well, I used to kind of say, well, straight white men are where the problem lies, but I've now come to the, as I was on Twitter today, I saw somebody tweet about how Uganda is trying to institute a rule, a kill gay people law or something. Yeah, I don't know if that's real or not. I just saw it and someone was like, real. This is what's happening in the States right now. This is what's coming to Western culture right now. And I was saying to my wife, like, yeah, I don't think it's, I think it's straight men across the board are so afraid so cognizant of the fact that their time is over, that they're just flailing about and they're attacking every other group. And I also went on and on about how I believe that throughout the world, the reason women and reproduction is so frequently attacked is because, or preserved, I guess, is because I think, and tell me if this is going to be wild, Rich, tell me what you think. I think conservatives realize that if they can breed people who are struggling, those people tend to align with conservative values in the end. The fear and the hatred and the resentment that we so often see from conservatives, what is the best way to propel that? Well, let's attack universities and schools. Let's attack media and information sources like TikTok as we're speaking. Mm-hmm. Let's attack ways people are sharing information and learning about what's actually happening. And let's also force people to have children who maybe don't want to have children, can't afford to have children. Mm-hmm. And dollars to donuts, odds are good. Those people are going to be so dependent on the system. And also potentially be in such a rough shape that maybe they turn to crime, which supports a whole carceral system as well. And a dependence on all these institutions that we're trying to get rid of. Sorry, real rant here, but some people may disagree, but I think this is straight men, trying to realign things in their favor after, what seemed to be decades and decades of progress that directly undermined all the power plays and bullshit that they've been engaged in.
Yeah.
Have I just encapsulated your album title in a different way? Sorry for that rant.
Oh, no. You rant on. I think you're spot on. And I see little bits of what came out in the news even just yesterday of hockey players not wanting to wear a pride jersey. Yes. And this idea of, it's just a small few. Hockey's not that bad. And it's like, no, I'm pretty sure hockey's that bad. Yeah. Like the PR people with hockey gotta and what's that? That's a male dominated kind of, domain. And I grew up with Alan Bester and Harold Ballard and all of the fun characters.
Yeah, me too.
But let's face it, like, you know, enough. So men out of time, I'll buy it. Well, you should buy it, dear listener.
So, in terms of is that a running theme though on this record? Would you say, or I've really focused on the umbrella concept?
Ooh, I mean, it bounces all over the place from the Quebecois stuff, which is not my voice, but really resonates. I love Félix Leclerc's songwriting, to personal things around even family dynamic and what is perceived. You talked about conservatism when it comes to even the family unit, the way we perceive it, and kiddos and doggos kind of loosely will touch on that too. It kind of bounces all over the place to statues being torn down in A Reasonable Man. It's all there. Yeah. I am listening. I am paying attention and doing my best to reflect. And dare I say, it's my 16th record, but I still feel good. And I'll always say this as, I hope I'll always say this as a creative person, that the last thing I did is the best thing I did. And I'm super proud of it. You know what I mean? And until I, and maybe there will come a point where I feel that it's like, ooh, that ain't the case anymore. But this creative world, this landscape still continues to like fascinate me and put a big smile on my face. And that's why we do it. It's to connect with people in whatever way, shape or form, you know? So yeah, man, super thankful. Like I get to share it with the world now.
I'm happy to have received it. So I want to, on behalf of the world, and I believe I've been deputized to speak on behalf of the world. I have a badge. Thank you, Rich, for this effort and your work to help people think differently and maybe, you know, home into parts of their imagination they may not have realized were there. You do this with your work, and I, on this record and throughout all the things you do. So I just want to say, from Edmonton, Alberta, to where are you? Are you in where? I didn't even ask you where you were. I usually do.
I'm in Brampton, Ontario, the home of culture herself.
From all the way from Edmonton to Brampton, home of culture and some great Indian food. Let's not get that twisted. I miss some of the Brampton Indian food. Congratulations and thank you. I want to ask you about your future plans, I suppose. You alluded to some touring or live shows. I want to ask you about that. I also want to ask you where people can learn more about those plans and also this excellent new record. Can you speak to some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, friendlyrich.com is the place to get all things friendly. And I'm embarking on a residency at the Happy Land Theater, and hopefully to be also culminating a live performance at the Music Box Village in New Orleans, where I did a bunch of my doctoral research in 2019. So, and connected with a bunch of weirdos out there who knew of Brian Poole's work. So that felt like a bit of a coming home. It's like, oh, you know Ronaldo in the Loaf.
Yeah.
So I'm connecting with beautiful people out there in New Orleans, and I'm going with it. You know what I mean?
Nice.
I feel honored to be able to take on some of these projects coming out of the pandemic, where it's like, of course I'm still doing my monthly residency at the Cameron House, and you can see me there on the last Sunday of every month. But the world is pretty big. I'm planning a European tour in October, and want to do some dates in Quebec throughout the summer and fall too. So lots on the go, and enjoying every minute of it, you know, because I think you cherish it now coming out of the pandemic, of what it means to be on a stage with your friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You just brandished a vinyl copy of this record. So it will be available. That's my that's what I gather. People can buy it at friendlyrich.com.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. It's We Are Busybodies are the label that's put it out, and, honored to have their support, as I am to have yours all these years.
Of course. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show for I don't know how many times. Man, we've had some good adventures. Oof. This is the least adventurous in a... Sorry. 4 years ago, this would have seemed technologically remarkable,
like,
that we were able
doing?
To do
yes,
this.
Exactly.
But we, for those who don't know, one of the first times Rich was on this particular show, we did a kind of two-man parade through Guelph. We walked and talked all the way to Eric the Baker from my house and met people along the
That's
way.
Right.
I can't remember if we went to the farmer's market. It was like a Saturday morning.
We did.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did a bunch of stuff, and it was like a field recording interview, and it was really fun. And then, I think
that was fun.
The last time we went, I met Rich at Granddad's Donuts, who are a proud in-kind sponsor. I shouldn't say they're proud. I'm proud that they're an in-kind sponsor of this podcast, which means I get donuts from them. I haven't had them in quite some time, but...
Does the Granddad's affiliation, like if I go to Granddad's, which I've been known to do, can I tap in on that, saying I've been on Creative Control 3 times, or do I have to become a patron of the show? I think I should become a patron of the show, and then any patron gets a free donut a year, one donut a year.
You know what?
We'll talk about that
offline. I have to check with the person I work with there at the Granddad's, but that's not a bad idea.
Okay.
I want one donut, whatever it takes. I'm sure they could spare a single donut for a loyal Creative Control listener. You know what, Rich? You're a genius.
Especially if I become a patron. It's like, well, I'm supporting the show.
Yeah. Well, geez, you don't have to. Yeah, no, you don't have to do that. I'll figure something out. Don't do that. But I appreciate it.
I love the show, Vish. I appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you.
I'm going to do
Thank
it. You. It's happening.
Thank you.
I appreciate you and Granddad's. The affiliation is great.
Well, you should get a percentage of the Patreon just for coming up with this amazing donut idea. It's great. Now, I want to go out on a song from this great new record, and I wonder, Rich, if you can actually pick one for us and also tell us why it came to mind.
Well, let's freak people out. If you're driving, if you're cooking, let's play Kiddos and Doggos. It features my hero from Ronaldo and the Loaf, Brian Poole.
Yeah.
And let's wake up. Let's shake up your listeners a little bit here.
It is kind of like the way Enjoy. Alarms are now. It starts calmly and then wake up. Mm-hmm. No more snoozing. Mm-hmm. It's time to go. Okay.
That's right.
All right, everybody. Prepare yourself for this next song. This is Kiddos and Doggos from Man Out of Time, the beautiful new record by Friendly Rich. Rich, I love you very much. Thank you for this time. I wish you the best of luck with everything, and I hope we talk again soon, in person perhaps even, over love a you. Donut.
Love you too, my friend. Thank you.
I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Whew. Enjoy the Kiddos and Doggos. Took you by surprise, didn't it? Took me by surprise the first time I played it too, so now you know what it feels like to be me. Thanks again to the great and entertaining Friendly Rich Marcella. Always lovely to speak with Rich. Long relationship here, and it's nice to have him back on the show. This time for the 772nd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't locate an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it and you don't know where it is, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can like or follow Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at Vish Creative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at Vish Khanna. Creative Control is ostensibly a donor-driven exercise, and as such, I would like to direct you to patreon.com/creativecontrol, where you can make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. You can donate any amount you really want or feel you can afford per month, and you can always change it. You can go up, you can go down, you can cancel it outright, whatever you feel like doing at any given time. $6 American or more a month grants you access to some exclusive content, and you also get episodes earlier than everybody else, and also still have some Creative Control t-shirts in stock. Just sent one off to Massachusetts. Somebody in Massachusetts is feeling a little chilly and they need a t-shirt, so I sent them one. And I could send one to you, too, if I have any left in the size and color you want. I got red and or maroon. It's maroon. I'm not the best with colors. It's maroon and the yellow one. Anyway, if you're interested in a t-shirt, just let me know at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again for supporting the show there. Speaking of thanks, I want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario. All fine establishments that I hope you can visit if you're in town or get off the highway there, get off the 401, head into Guelph and check those places out. Oh, also go to Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. All of those places offer in-kind support for the show, so thanks to them. Also want to thank my friend Jim Guthrie for lending me some music of his on the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Friendly Rich. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll check out Rich's music. And we'll consider subscribing to this podcast or following it or telling your friends all about it and maybe encouraging them to do similar things. Otherwise, I hope you're well and keeping well and all those sorts of things, and that, you know, you hear from me again by pressing play. Thank you so much for engaging with me in this show. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.